Part 1. A Bird's Eye View. Chapter 1. I could only shake my head. A police officer stopped me one day as I drove home along the Schuster Parkway in Tacoma, Washington. "Young lady," he began, I was 53 at the time. "Do you realize you were going 52 miles an hour in a 40-mile-an-hour zone?" "No, officer, I wasn't aware of that. I need to see your driver's license and insurance for the van." I found my driver's license in my wallet, thankful it was where it should be, but I could not find the insurance in the Honda Odyssey's glove compartment. "I'm giving you a warning for driving over the speed limit, but this is a ticket for driving without insurance. If you appear in court with proof of insurance, your $150 fine will be reduced." I got the ticket on November 10th. On November 21st, my husband and I bought a Toyota Prius. And on November 30th, I drove the Prius to my court appearance. The judge asked me for proof of insurance. I walked out to the Prius, retrieved the proof of insurance, and handed it to the clerk, who gave it to the judge. The judge studied the proof of insurance and then reviewed the information about my ticket. "Please step forward." I promptly complied with his request. "This insurance policy began on November 22nd, but your ticket is dated November 10th. There was a pause while he waited for me to explain, but I remained silent. I could not explain the discrepancy in dates. Then the judge said in astonishment, "This ticket is for a Honda Odyssey, and this insurance is for a Toyota Prius." I had shown up in court on the right day, but had forgotten why I needed to be there. I was embarrassed at making such a foolish mistake, but it was far from the first time. "Clerk, please reschedule Mrs. Hammer for a future court date when she will appear before me with the Honda Odyssey's proof of insurance." I returned to court on January 3rd with the correct insurance certificate. I waited and waited, listening to the other court cases, but they never called me before the court was adjourned for the morning. Stunned, I pulled the notice from my pocket and saw that my court date was for the following week, January 10th. The clincher to my courtroom saga occurred when my husband Steve told me, "There are two glove compartments in the Odyssey. The proof of insurance is in the top one." When the police officer stopped me, I looked in the wrong glove compartment. The insurance was in the car all along. I could only shake my head. We had that Odyssey for 8 years, and I never realized it had two glove compartments. If you occasionally do this sort of thing, you think nothing of it. However, when someone makes mistakes like this almost every day, that is a different kettle of fish. Everyone is forgetful, distracted, and confused at one time or another. But when these patterns are embedded in your everyday life, you probably have ADHD. Getting details wrong is common for people with this disorder. We initially get something wrong without realizing it. And once we have it wrong in our heads, we keep referring to the incorrect information, not realizing we got it wrong to start with. People with ADHD are distractible. When we park the car, we do not pay attention to where we parked it, as we are already thinking about what we plan to buy in the store. We do not pay attention when someone mentions the title of the next book to read or when the book discussion group meets again. We half-register what was said and blithely proceed with our half-knowledge. I have many examples of things I frequently do but still struggle to remember how to do them correctly. On my drive to Seattle, the road splits. If I turn right, I head north to Seattle. If I turn left, I head south to Portland. Because both roads initially take me in the opposite direction from my intended destination, I get confused about which road to take. If I don't read the signs carefully, I often make the wrong choice. In the front hall of our house, there are two light switches. One turns on the porch light, the other turns on the hall light. After 45 years in this house, I still do not remember which switch is correct. To help me remember, I tell myself the top switch is for the porch light. The next time I want to turn on the porch light, I say the top switch is for, but I can't remember what comes after that. When entering Costco, I show my membership card to the clerk and put it in my coat pocket so I can easily get it when checking out. Then at checkout, I look for it in my wallet because that is where it's supposed to be. After not finding it there, I remember it is in my pocket. I understand most people have memory problems, but with ADHD, I forget where I put something that was in my hand only 5 minutes earlier. Being diagnosed and treated for inattentive ADHD allowed me to develop tactics to deal with forgetfulness. I make lists. I mentally prepare for events so that in the moment I will not forget important information. I purposely pay attention when parking the car and sometimes take a photo of where I parked it. I have put labels on the front hall light switches so I know which one is which. I remind myself before I confront the right turn for Seattle that it will be a turn to the right. My brain gets confused, but if I give it a moment, especially when it is not under pressure to perform, I make the correct choice. However, these tactics don't erase the painful memories of my more seriously forgetful episodes. Our son Charles attended a Montessori preschool held in the teacher's home. One day, I dropped him off at the front gate, watched him walk to the door, and drove off. 2 hours later, a neighbor who lived near the school called me. I forgot that preschool was closed that day, and Charles had been sitting on the steps for 2 hours, waiting for my return. I was mortified. What did Charles think? What did the neighbor think? When our son Jackson was 9, I drove him to his first day at a new school. The school was 4 miles away. He was to take the bus back home. I called the bus system when he did not appear by 4 p.m. He had not gotten on the bus. I called the school principal. He did not know Jackson's whereabouts. I was frantic. I called Steve and told him Jackson was missing. In desperation, I drove to the school to search for him. By now, he had been missing for 2 hours. A half mile from the school, I saw him cheerfully walking home. When I honked, he got in the car, and I burst into tears. I was crying so hard I could not see where I was going and had to pull into a parking lot. A concerned woman driver pulled up to ask if I was all right. "Everything is fine. My son, who I thought was lost, is found." I cried tears of joy that I found him, tears of relief that he was safe. But I embarrassed Jackson with my show of emotion. "It's no big deal," he said. "It's nothing to cry about. You said you would pick me up after school. When you didn't show up, I went to the YMCA and then decided to walk home." To him, I had not shown up. No big deal. I didn't know if I told him to take the bus home or I would pick him up. Not able to count on my version, not able to count on my memory, I believed Jackson's version was the correct one. When I cannot even remember the commitments I make to my sons, I have to wonder, do they think they can't count on their mother? Years later, when I shared my diagnosis with them, my sons, who knew the letters ADHD but did not realize the impact this disorder had on my life, said a little. The New England way of dealing with issues is to suck it up and not complain. I was not forever saying, "There goes my darn ADHD again." And they never asked me, "Do you think your ADHD is why you forgot to pick me up so many years ago?" We simply did not talk about it. Even my husband Steve still does not have a good understanding of my ADHD and its effects on my life. It is for this reason that I believe most people with ADHD try to keep their struggles private. No one understands. That is why going to a conference with 800 other adults who have this disorder is an immense relief and a joyous occasion. We have permission to be who we are. Having ADHD is like having arthritis, a hidden disorder. Others are rarely aware of our disability. If they are aware of some bizarre things we do or say, they chalk it up to our being unusual, not to our having a disorder. It is the rare person without ADHD who recognizes it. However, people with ADHD seem to have special antennae that recognize it in others who remain unaware they have this disorder. Since my diagnosis, I see people all the time who don't know they are living day in and day out with ADHD. Why is that? The most conservative estimate is that 4.4% of the population has ADHD, meaning one adult in every 25 I meet has it. But fewer than 20% have been diagnosed. Several years ago, Steve, Charles, and I went on a vacation to a remote location in Montana. Steve made reservations at a bed and breakfast, and I got ADHD vibes when I called the owner, Sally, to confirm our arrival. I did not tell Steve my suspicions because I knew he would roll his eyes. I kept my mouth shut, surprise, surprise, except to say to him, "We have reservations," meaning the save-the-date kind. So why did I get ADHD vibes about Sally? Well, she had no record of our reservation when I called to confirm. When Steve called her 3 weeks earlier, she said she would send us literature. It never arrived. When I asked how much to send for the deposit, she could not remember what she charged. When I asked the cost of breakfast, she said $10 each, and then corrected herself. No, $5. I reiterated the dates we would arrive, September 4th, and depart September 8th. Immediately after my phone call with Sally, the fishing guide in Montana called me. Sally had called him and told him we were arriving on September 3rd. After our arrival, things were looking up. The bed and breakfast was well cared for, a spacious house with several rocking chairs on the front porch, and a well-manicured lawn interspersed with flower beds of daisies and peonies. It was at the end of a long driveway with open grass fields in every direction, under a blue sky stretched from horizon to horizon. Unfortunately, when I met Sally, the ADHD vibes also stretched from horizon to horizon. She had the frazzled, thrown-together appearance of many people with ADHD. She sat down to chat at our first morning's breakfast, lost track of time, and burned the English muffins, a reminder of episodes in my kitchen at home. The following day, Sally, who said our breakfast would be at 8 a.m., to give the men a chance to eat before leaving to fish at 9 a.m., did not appear until 8:30 a.m. I had planned to bicycle for the day, but the key Sally gave me did not open the door to our room when I returned to get my sunglasses. Sally's husband was positive I inserted the key the wrong way. After a few tries, he realized that Sally had given me the wrong key. Perhaps I notice more people with ADHD because the numbers are increasing. One theory is that in a mobile society, ADHD is more likely to increase because people with the condition are more likely to find one another. In a less mobile society, someone with this disorder, having fewer choices, is unlikely to find a spouse with ADHD. This is significant because two people with ADHD are more likely to have children with the disorder, which strengthens the gene pool. People with ADHD naturally are attracted to one another. Our patterns and rhythms synchronize. If he spends long hours on the internet, it does not matter because she is out running a marathon. If she forgets to do the laundry, that is okay because he failed to buy the detergent. ADHD couples can happily coexist through many years of marriage. They find activities to do together or individually. Cycling and hiking are enjoyable to people with ADHD, as they require little structure, few rules, minimal organization, and no planning. We enjoy activities where there's no need to reserve court time or find a partner. Likewise, square dancing and contra dancing attract people with ADHD because little memory is needed. The caller tells the dancers what to do next. The music, the movement, the casual dress, and the relaxed atmosphere are tonics for those with ADHD. I believe Toastmasters attracts a disproportionate number of people with ADHD. We want to learn to communicate appropriately and may even want to learn to listen. When I gave a talk on being a first-class forgetter at a Toastmasters meeting, several people told me afterward it sounded like them. I nodded, saying to myself, "You probably have undiagnosed ADHD." Recently, I joined a great books discussion group. Heated discussions on interesting ideas and topics attract people with this disorder. They like meaty conversations and find chit-chat a challenge and a waste of time. Once again, I recognized the ADHDers among us because they could not let go when the discussion moved on. They had to have their say, even if their comments were no longer relevant. If you are pining away for wild and crazy ADHD company, simply open your eyes and ears. You will find us. We are everywhere. Michael Phelps in the swimming pool. Simone Biles in the gymnasium. Adam Levine in a rock band. Glenn Beck broadcasting the news. Lisa Lang writing the news. Richard Branson developing companies. And Jamie Oliver cooking tasty dishes. When I am open about having ADHD, I find I start unexpected conversations with people who say, "I have a son with ADHD, my wife has ADHD, or I sometimes wonder if I have ADHD." More so than with other mental illnesses, the stigma for ADHD is profound, and there is a widespread disbelief that a person has it or that it is a valid medical disorder. It is hard for people without ADHD to comprehend how globally ADHD affects a person's life. Recently, a woman with ADHD requested support from members of an online group. She wrote, "I am so tired of trying so hard. Despite trying, my partner still feels I am not trying hard enough. He does not recognize how difficult it is for me. I feel like I can't continue, that I can't go on living like this. Of course, I wouldn't do anything, but have any of you felt this way?" Her comment made me wonder if I was fortunate to live for 49 years without knowing I had ADHD. What does learning you have ADHD do to a person's beliefs about herself? What impact does it have on a person who's no longer a child, yet not old enough to be secure in their self-image? How does a person who already has too many stresses in her life cope with the diagnosis? What if it's too much to handle, digest, and accept? Perhaps her diagnosis comes with the expectation of improvement, and the dismay is all the greater when improvement does not occur. For some, their diagnosis is a relief. They finally understand themselves and the reasons for their struggles. But for others, the diagnosis is an additional burden, one more nail in the coffin of their presumed inadequacies. Their deficiencies become magnified in their minds, particularly when they learn about people who surmount their ADHD challenges while they still cannot get a grasp on their own. They go online to find others with ADHD who share their unhappiness to feel better temporarily. They think, "I am not alone. Others are flailing, the same as me." I become sad and discouraged when I read posts like these. I know they don't share their shortcomings just to complain. They are asking for help, seeking ways forward. I know they want to create better lives for themselves, to be better partners, employees, parents, and friends. But it is all too overwhelming. There are too many things to improve all at once. I wrote this book to tell them about the path I took to improve, hoping they will improve as well. I recommend patience. After I got my diagnosis, I kept telling myself, "Nothing has changed. You only have a name for what has always been." A diagnosis for ADHD, unlike the diagnosis for some conditions, means you can get better. But how do you get better? One step at a time. Your ADHD journey starts with one step, then another step, and another step after that. Over time, your steps add up, and you make significant progress. Think of the simplest things you can change to make the biggest difference. For some, it may be getting to bed by 10 p.m. For another, it might be eating breakfast every morning. For me, it was returning my credit card to its home in my wallet. Until my first step became a habit, I did not attempt a second step. but achieving my first good habit gave me the confidence to create a second good habit. I learned to talk encouragingly to myself. I took my baby steps and became more confident with each step. Do not rush your ADHD journey. Take it one step at a time. Myth: everyone is a bit ADHD. Fact: while everyone may have occasional typical ADHD behaviors, that does not mean they have ADHD. Just as many people are a few pounds overweight, that does not mean they are obese. Most people lose their keys, are late to class or a meeting, and have trouble delaying gratification. But these behaviors are not the same as having ADHD. With ADHD, the behaviors are not a choice, and the reason is neurological. ADHD is a constant in the lives of people with this disorder. ADHD symptoms include inattention, weak impulse control, lack of focus, poor time management, procrastination, dysregulated emotions, and executive dysfunction.